Some comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to our Sunday Space Show program, which is today an open lines program, which means we talk about what you want to talk about. Please address issues dealing with space, any aspect of space. I'm not talking about real estate space, but space, you know, what's above the earth. STEM, steam, and science, if you're so inclined. And tell us what's on your mind. What would you like to explore? And our toll-free number for those of you who want to call, and by the way, on open lines, calling works a lot better than email. The toll-free number, again, is 1-866-687-7223. It is turned off for the moment because I have a couple of announcements and a couple of suggested topics, including some pretty lighthearted topics, but maybe I'll... we'll want to have some fun with them. Again, 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And our blog, which is on our website, thespaceshow.com, all the way over to the far right side for upcoming shows. And this is the first show listed. It is also the archive page for the Open Lines program. So open it up, and all the way down at the bottom is where you comment or ask questions on the blog. And if you do that during the live show, I'll get your comment or question right away and can integrate your thoughts into the program as soon as possible or when applicable. But again, the preferred way is the toll-free line, 1-866-687-7223. While you're at our website, thespaceshow.com, our detailed website newsletter will be uploaded after today's program. And it has all of the details for the shows this week, plus it has the upcoming show menu. And we're pretty much booking for April and May and June. We're filling up slots in the second quarter of 2018. And if you have topics or guests that you'd like us to cover, send me the information. I do follow them up. I can't promise you that the people respond or that they're willing to come on to the Space Show. Some of them are not. Some of them never bothered to respond. And but we do follow it up. And I'm appreciative of your suggestions and will do my best to follow through. So if you are going to send me a suggestion, tell me why you think the guy or the gal would be a good guest. And if you have contact information for the person, specifically an email address or a website, let me know. And if you have anything notable that you're aware of that he's done, you know, like maybe a TED Talk or something on the web or something of that nature, send me the link to that as well. And I appreciate that. In addition, everything we do is archived on the website, so you can very quickly download programs or just listen to them right off of our website. Look in the upper left, and there is a menu, and if you're interested in logo wear for the Space Show, under the support menu, you'll see a store for Cafe Press. That's where you will find our items. Check it out. Suggestions are always welcome, and hopefully you'll find some Space Show logo gear that interest you or a friend or somebody, maybe for a gift. And then there is Listen Live, which is another button upper left, and that tells you how to listen to our live shows, all of our archive shows, our podcasting shows, right off of the website or the different servers. We do have iPhone information. We don't have a lot of information for the other platforms, only because I'm not familiar with them. But I can certainly add it if people give me information to add. And then in addition, we have Alexa information for those of you preferring Alexa, and the TuneIn player is there as well. By the way, the toll-free number is disconnected at the moment. I'll tell you when I turn it back on. We are trademark and copyrighted, and we do allow you to copy information off of our website, download the shows, and share them. There are some rules, very simple. Everything has rules, so do we. Number one is don't do anything commercial with our programs. And number two is don't edit, clip, or cut segments in our programs. Don't place anything up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. If you have a reason to do something with all or part of one of our programs, please email me in advance. Tell me what you want to do, and let's see if we can't work it out. And you can always reach me by email at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then, in addition, written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Podcasting is through gigadial.net, and they're pretty much all over the board. You'll find us in iTunes and other places. If you have questions about our podcasting or the platform you're using for our podcasting, don't hesitate to email me at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. I'll do my best to answer your questions or get them answered for you if you have stumped me, which is probably the case. And again, happy to take your questions. The most important part of our website, I believe, is supporting the Space Show. It's over on the center right of our homepage. And remember, we're a listener financially supported program. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And if you donate to us and you pay federal U.S. taxes, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. Our parent is OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. Check them out. Or email me for more information, drspace at thespaceshow.com. We're also a California Public Benefit Corporation. So if you pay California taxes, you get a tax deduction for supporting the Space Show as well. And then there are two Amazon ways to support nonprofits, and the Space Show is listed. If you click on the Amazon link in the center of our website, you will be taken to our Amazon page at OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, and I think those instructions are pretty clear. But if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask me. Amazon's a great way to support the Space Show because you do your normal shopping at your normal prices, and Amazon donates a portion of your purchase price on qualified purchases to the nonprofit of your choice. So just do the regular things you do with Amazon, and they support us as well as other nonprofits that use the same system. So we thank you, Amazon. In addition to the individual supporters, we do have sponsors. So the sponsors do get their banner ad going across the homepage. You can change that banner ad as often as you like. And I also, on full-length shows, read your 60-second or less message. So, for example, for the first segment for today, the Space Development Network says, would you like to see space settlement occur in your lifetime? The Space Development Network is an online organization that allows you, the advocate, to join together with others to advance the plan for space development. We need people with a wide variety of interests and skills. The network is free to join. Check it out at spacedevelopment.org. And then the Space Foundation sponsors us, and they're with us for the first segment as well. Today, engage with global space leaders and decision makers at the 34th Space Symposium. It is April 16th through the 19th at the Broadmoor Hotel in Colorado Springs, Colorado. For all your reservations, conference, hotel, transportation, everything, go to www.spacesymposium.org. And then also for the first segment, the Integrated Space Plan is with us, and this is a highly detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another? explore hundreds of individual elements in more detail at thespaceplan.com. You can join discussions, see regular updates, and participate in exclusive interactive features. You can order your own full-color poster, and it's in two sizes. There's also an academic version as well as a regular version. It's a very useful and inspiring tool. It should be hung on the wall of people serious about space development. So please do check it out at thespaceplan.com. And as I said, today is open lines, and I have a couple of suggested topics that you might want to explore with me. Most are lighthearted, and we can have fun with them if you want, and one is serious, okay? So here's on the lighthearted side. My son sent me this website on how to bake, and I bake like in cook, B-A-K-E, scientifically accurate cake planets. So if you go to this website, they have really incredible cakes that are representative of the planets, and they are scientifically accurate with color and the core. They show you the inside of the cake, and they give you the baking instructions on how to do this. So if you have a space geek's birthday coming up, or and you like to bake, or you know someone who likes to bake, you ought to check out this site. Now, I have no idea what the cakes taste like. I don't know what they use for coloring, if they're using, you know, high-quality food coloring or, you know, toxic food coloring. I don't know what they're using, okay, because I don't bake. But, boy, I'd like someone to bake a space cake planet for me for my birthday coming up in June. Let's see, what planet would I want my cake to represent? And I don't know. Maybe, you know, I really like Europa. Of course, that's the moon, but and I really want to see the Europa mission happen. So maybe Europa would be a good one for me. Certainly, if you could do Saturn with the rings, I don't know how you could do that with the as a cake. But maybe they've got that figured out too. It'd be pretty cool. Anyway, you can find this by doing a Google search, how to bake, B-A-K-E, scientifically accurate cake planets. And it is a website, www.wait, W-A-I-T, wow, all one word, W-O-W, so it's waitwow.com/make-scientifically-accurate-cake-planets. So if someone out there actually bakes and tries one of these, send us pictures and call an open lines or email me and tell me about it, and we'll talk about it and tell us what it tasted like, okay? The pictures are really cool, and as I said, I'd love for someone to bake me a planet of your Europa cake, okay? Okay, now, George Lucas, which we can talk about on the space show, is behind the building of an unbelievable museum that is breaking ground, it has broken ground, in Los Angeles. It's called the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. And this was sent to me by an architecture friend of mine, published with color pictures of the museum in the shape of one of the spaceships from Star Wars, in something called the Architectural Record. And it's a rendering of the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art by Ma Yang Sun of MAD Architects. And the website is pretty long, so I'm not going to give out the URL on the website. But it says the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art broke ground yesterday in South Los Angeles' Exposition Park, designed by MAD Architects founder Ma Yang Song. The $1 billion, 300,000 square feet museum will house George Lucas's extensive collection of art and transform existing parking lots on the site into 11 acres of new green space designed by LA-based landscape architect firm Studio MLA. And then it goes on and on and on about what the museum is going to be and everything. So I think you can find it. So again, the website is Architectural Record, and their website is www.architecturalrecord.com. And the headline for the article, if you want to see the picture of the Lucas Museum, is Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. The article came to me on March 18th. But I think it was actually printed in Architectural Record on March 15th. So everybody check that one out if you're interested. It is really a cool-looking design. If they say it'll cost $1 billion, what do you want to bet? It cost $1.5 billion. By the way, the toll-free line is turned on. You're welcome to call in, and I'll get to you as soon as possible. I got a note update in the news. United Launch touts new Vulcan rocket in competition with SpaceX. So someone might want to comment on this. SpaceX and its visionary founder, Elon Musk, win the lion's share of public attention in the commercial rocket arena with dramatic, increasingly routine booster landings and spectacular stunts like the Tesla Roadster. But arch-rival ULA, a much more buttoned-down corporate alliance between Boeing and Lockheed Martin, is responding to a threat posed by upstart SpaceX with long-range plans to phase out its workhorse Atlas V and costly Delta IV rockets in favor of a powerful, less expensive launcher known as Vulcan. And the article goes on for several pages. So if you're interested in what may compete with SpaceX vis-a-vis ULA and Vulcan, you might try to get a hold of this or a similar article. And again, the headlines on what I'm reading coming from CBS is ULA touts, T-O-U-T-S, new Vulcan rocket in competition with SpaceX. So somebody might want to talk about that. We had a recent show with Bob Zubrin, and in keeping with Bob's consistent comments about the risk of radiation, he does downplay them, and he claims that people citing higher numbers than his 1% are fear-mongering and have an agenda to keep people out of space and to scare people about radiation. So one can... except Bob. I mean, he's been constant for years and years about that. But there is a relatively new study. I think it was published in February of this year. Update on the worsening particle radiation environment observed by CRADR and implications for future human deep space exploration. So this is in the journal Space Weather, which is an AGU journal. And a couple of lines in the abstract. Over the last decade, the solar wind has exhibited low density and magnetic field strengths, representing anomalous states that have never been observed during the space age. As discussed by Schwarden, so this is Dr. Nathan Schwarden at the University of New Hampshire, the cycle 23-24 solar activity led to the longest solar minimum in more than 80 years and continued into the mini-solar maximum of cycle 24. During this weak activity, we observed galactic cosmic ray fluxes that exceeded the levels observed throughout the space age, and we observed small solar energetic particle events. Hence, we provide an update to the Schwarden et al. Observations from the Cosmic Ray Telescope for the effects of radiation, this is CRADR, on the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, LRO. The Schwarden study examined the evolution of the interplanetary magnetic field and utilized a previously published study by Geltzer et al. From 2013, projecting out the interplanetary magnetic field. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. So it's been published and paraphrased in many popular publications. So I have one in front of me from Newsweek. Let's see, do I have the date on the Newsweek article? I don't really have the date. Yeah, March 16th in Newsweek, and the author of the article in Newsweek is Megan, M-E-G-H-A-N, Bartels, B-A-R-T-E-L-S, and it summarizes the study. The headline on the Newsweek article, if you want to find it, is Space Travel for Humans, Robots, More Dangerous Thanks to Radiation. Space has many ways to kill you. One standout among the menu of options, radiation, the constant stream of charged particles ricocheting through space at incredible speeds. There's radiation trapped directly around Earth, and the particles are also produced by our own sun and by stellar explosions, and scientists have some bad news. Radiation is getting worse. Let me repeat that. Maybe Bob is listening. Radiation is getting worse. Scientists have known for decades about the dangerous radiation. It's one of their biggest concerns about long-term space travel, and in particular about visiting Mars, which lacks the magnetic shield that protects Earth. Space radiation isn't the same thing as the radiation we worry about here on Earth, like X-ray, which is made of light that our eyes simply can't process. Instead, it's subatomic particles and the cores of elements, but moving almost as fast as light. Absorb enough radiation and it causes long-term health problems, including cancer. It is not good for the machines that power our spacefaring robots, since it also slowly eats away at technology. So you can read the whole article. You can find the actual study if you want to. I told you how to do it. And cosmic radiation and radiation risks for human deep space exploration are getting worse, not better. And this does not coincide with what Dr. Zubin says, although Dr. Zubin would clearly point to these people as fear-mongering, plus the other names he used on his recent show last Tuesday night, as he played down the risk of radiation, saying it was only a 1% risk, about equal to a pack of cigarettes. So I do have a caller on hold. I'm going to go take the call, but those topics are up for fair game on the Space Show Open Lines today, plus anything else you might have in mind. Hi, caller. Welcome to Open Lines today. Who are you? Where are you? Thank you for calling.
This is Marshall, Oklahoma. And
do you just sit around?
It's been an exciting week.
Do you just sit around and wait to be the first caller on every show? I mean, is this like your life ambition? How do you pull it off?
It is one of the things that is intellectually fun. Is talking to you. I mean, let's face it.
What a boring life. But I thank you for the compliment, Marshall.
Anyway, I was sitting around a couple of nights ago, and I happened to come across a piece about the NASA people gathering together to talk about the Deep Space Gateway. And the other project was called Skylab 2, and that's with an II instead of 2, because if you Google Skylab 2, they give you Skylab Original Mission 2.
Okay.
Anyway, I started looking at this because you know that I have been looking at the replacement for the International Space Station. And you accuse me of drinking a little too much Kool-Aid. Hey, you're correct, because I didn't go and look at all the other possibilities beyond Falcon Heavy.
Well, and you hadn't really looked at what the commercial companies wanted to do with space stations, that they're trying to build their own.
Well, there's one commercial company that wants to take ISS and make it into a tourist attraction and it's kind of like, I don't know how they're going to foot the $1 billion a year maintenance fee.
They'll just turn it over to California, maybe. I don't know, and let California worry about it. They seem to take on these projects without the economic concern.
I'm sorry that you just broadsided me with a concept that's like, wow, what an interesting thought.
Disneyland, a new Disneyland in space. But no, I was pointing you toward Bigelow and Axiom, you know, which I consider to be pretty serious contenders for private space station work.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, taking a rule of thumb from aircraft design and aircraft building and so on, you start with the engine, and then you build the aircraft around the engine. In this case, it's looking at the Merlin engine, the Raptor engine, which is the replacement for the Merlin engine that SpaceX is working on. And you look at the RS-25, which is the space shuttle engines being put on SLS. And then you look at the Vulcan engine, which is being developed by Blue Origin. Each one of those produces a significantly different launch system, and the launch system determines how you end up building the next space station. In other words, my big error is I'm trying to figure this out before, you know, the big decision on which is the winning system. And it does mean that there's a huge amount of difference between space station A, B, C, D, E, F, and G that can be built, along with the economics of each one of them, how much they cost. And it's kind of like, ooh, you end up way out in the weeds very quickly.
You know, I'm not an engineer by any means, and I've never represented myself to be one. And trust me, I don't have engineering background other than what I've learned on the space show, and maybe that is suspect. I don't know. But it would seem to me that if you were going to build a space station, you would start out trying to determine what is the purpose of this space station. What do you want it to do? If it's commercial, who are the customers? What services or products or what mechanisms is it going to rely on to generate commercial revenues? Because that's the definition of commercial. It needs to make a profit at some point. And you come up with something, and then you begin the process, which is so common in space, and that is mission trades, which would then bring in how do you economically get the thing to where it will work and commercially make money, and depending on which system you're going to use and what the capabilities are of this or that rocket and the economics of it, you're going to start making trades, otherwise known as a lot of compromises that probably make you mad as you're going through the process.
That's exactly what I was looking at, particularly on the Skylab 2 mission, which they're talking about taking the upper stage of SLS Orion and putting it out at Earth Moon Lagrange 2 as a station out there. And I'm sitting here going, okay. And their big sales point is, oh, that particular space station would have a 23-foot diameter. And I'm going, who cares? Just like you said, what value are you getting for it?
Are you talking about the Gateway now?
There's two of them. There's the Deep Space Gateway, which is basically going to be somewhat similar to the Skylab 2. But NASA's talking about spending $4 billion on both of them. Not $4 billion each. And it's kind of like, I can't see any great value in this, which is your point.
Well, first of all, the Gateway's been renamed. It's the Lunar Orbital Platform -Gateway. So you ought to get it correct. And the landers are basically, so far, robotic, not people landers, although I suspect that could change. The Gateway, from everything I've heard on the space show, from listeners, as well as from people that are guests but not NASA guests, think it's a total waste of money and don't want to do it.
The NASA
guests speak the party line.
Okay. I did notice that Dr. Zubrin called it, I think the word was moondoggle, changing boondoggle to moongoggle.
Yeah, you know, and most, I don't know anyone supportive of it except the people that talk the party line coming from NASA. So if you want to go to the surface of the moon and you want to do things, then go to the surface of the moon and do things. And I think an orbiting space station around the moon doesn't make a lot of sense and deflects us from other things. But, of course, I don't have a policy vote here. So
neither do I.
I don't know if they will really insist on doing this or not, but I don't think it's any more popular than the ARM mission that was really unpopular on this show and with almost everybody I talked to except the NASA folks. So I don't know that the lunar orbital platform is a done deal. I don't know if that is policy that has been designated. Well, it can't have gotten funding yet because the budget is still proposed. It's not finalized. But it seems to me that that ought to be something that could be compromised out of the equation. Now, there may be listeners listening who do see value in the Gateway or the lunar orbital platform. I just don't see it, and I think you go to the surface of the moon and you go from there. And it's not even being put at locations that are really that great for the moon. And I just am not one that is very supportive of it. So I'm not familiar at all with Skylab 2, so you're telling me about it. You're among the first to bring it to my attention. The idea to have two of these at a cost of $8 billion, which means it would be closer to $15 or $20 billion when through, is in a day and age where they don't have money to do any of their projects without canceling other projects. And we just heard that the U.S. deficit topped $21 trillion for the first time ever. And paying the debt on the deficit, I know many space cadets dismiss all of this, is not voluntary. So space funding is discretionary or voluntary, and entitlements are not discretionary. So as we continue to finance our spending thirst, and you've heard from all sorts of people like Marcia Smith and others, that there isn't enough money, even in the $19-plus billion NASA budget, to do everything that NASA says it intends to do, and they need to cancel stuff, sizable stuff, which so far is not happening. And then they talk about two $4 billion lunar orbiting space stations. Something is wrong somewhere. But maybe this is because, the human spaceflight program at NASA is without a leader and is rudderless, and will be even more so when Lightfoot retires at the end of April. There is no administrator. So I think that this lack of leadership on the human side does play a role in all of this. NASA isn't being led or directed well on the human side. It looks like on the planetary mission side and the science side, they do pretty well. That's a whole different set of directorates. Mm-hmm. But and their planetary work and their scientific work is enviable. And it seems to be together. But so my criticism is on the human side. And I think a large amount of that may be because there's no leadership on the human side. And it's probably going to get worse unless they name an administrator before Lightfoot retires. And he's retiring at the end of April, and then there'll be nobody there. So yeah. I don't know.
Well, the other thing that we kind of touched on is what are the design objectives of a replacement space station? And I brought up the fact that we need to have artificial gravity, and we need to have farming, and then we have to do some further testing and so on for radiation control.
Okay, so let me stop you. Did you hear the NASA show a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, with Dr. John Charles, who had just retired from the human factors part of NASA? He was the deputy administrator of human research at NASA Johnson. So did you hear that show?
No, I haven't. I'll go back and do appropriate duty on that.
So he said, I'm paraphrasing him, so people, you know, don't come and jump on me. I'm paraphrasing him just to save time. In terms of the gravity problem, he said it is resolved as long as the astronauts follow the two-hour-a-day, six-day-a-week protocol that they have for mitigating gravity problems. He said they can't even go to Gerstenmaier, or wouldn't, to spend more money on this because the problem is resolved as long as these protocols are followed. Obviously, it's not resolved if you don't do what you're supposed to do. Take your vitamin C every day and drink your carrot juice. Okay.
Yes,
and when he was specifically asked by another listener, not me, about artificial gravity, he said that it wasn't even something that they would spend money on, because there's no reason to take money out of a tight budget when it's not necessary. That's number one. And number two, he said that it would probably cause more problems than it would probably resolve or benefit. So if you're looking for artificial gravity to come from NASA on a government space station, or a space station participated in somehow by the government, as say a public-private partnership, it ain't gonna happen.
That was my conclusion when I heard that line from another source, and I kind of go, yeah, we're going to put, I think it was Dr. Zubrin that said that Tuesday night. He basically said, yes, it is ridiculous to take and put your astronauts on bed rest and then land them on Mars and expect them to run like athletes.
Yeah, but they're not on bed rest. Remember, they're doing these two-hour exercise a day protocols and stuff like that. And Zubrin supports artificial gravity.
So, we agree.
Are you going to go to his conference in Los Angeles in August?
I'm probably going to be up to my eyeballs in farming.
Farming for space or farming for terrestrial here on Earth?
Hopefully it's going to be corn.
Well, corn stocks growing on a space station might be pretty high. I don't know.
We'll have to see in the future.
Zubrin wasn't too keen about your idea on farming. He downplayed the priority on that significantly.
Mm. Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I think growing food in space to be consumed in space keeps getting more and more important, particularly the further you get out. You run short of food. You're toast.
I've forgotten to draw your attention to Starship 2017 conference that I've talked about endlessly on this show from Monterey. I've got so many shows in the back of my mind in history. You know, we're coming up on 3,100 programs. So, and I can pull a lot of them out of my hat and recommend you listen to this one or that one. Well, anyway, Starship Congress in Monterey had speakers talking. And, you know, if Kim is listening, she has a better memory about this than me, or John Jossi. He has a better memory on this than me, too. But there were, I think, two speakers who talked about significant farming and agriculture and I think even fishing experimentation going on applicable to spaceflight. And if you were to go to Starship Congress 2017, Monterey, California, because I can't remember the name of the speakers or the exact name of the papers, you'd have to sort of fast scroll through all 3 days, but that wouldn't be that many, because it's not, I think it may be a total of 20. And you could find the programs that talk specifically, futuristically about agriculture and farming, including fish, applicable to long duration spaceflight. You might want to go do a little due diligence there and research and see what these people had to say. I remember that what they had to say and their talks were really big hits at the Congress. And again, if Kim and John are listening and they remember the details, if they post it on the blog, we'll have it, or if they email it to me, I will post it on the blog. But I draw your attention to those talks, and I think you will find them fascinating and applicable to your interest.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time to let Kim or John call in.
Well,
I'll talk to you again next time.
Well, I hope they do if they're listening, because I'm sure they'll remember it more than me. Thanks, Marshall, and say hello to Oklahoma for me. I do miss Tulsa, and hopefully I'll get back there in the near future. And I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Listeners, Marshall has left the stage, and and she is listening. Kim is listening. So the present, Marshall, are you still listening? The presentation by Andreas Tisolas, T-S-I-O-L-A-S. He's one of the organizers of it, and it'll be on the Icarus Interstellar YouTube channel. So I will put it in the summary, Marshall. That was Andreas's talk, and I remember it. I just didn't remember who did it. And thank you. And just a preview of Monday night. Actually, there's two announcements I should have made up front. Number one, the Monday show is Changing Times, and it is going to be at 7 p.m. And remember I told you I was saving Monday for timely news articles and things like that? Well, I'm giving it a try this time. So Zimmerman is coming back on Monday at 7 p.m. for some timely space news articles that have been happening over the past few days to the past 2 weeks. So that's timely for the space show. So Zimmerman's going to be with us. And then we're going to sing Happy Birthday to the Moonwards Girl, because she is having a birthday on the 19th. And I'm going to try to get Zimmerman to lead the chorus. So Monday night should be informative and a lot of fun, and a special happy birthday to the Moonwards Girl. And Kim, thank you for sending me the information on agriculture that Marshall might find applicable. The other quick announcement, other than the showtime change on Monday night, and by the way, that is just this Monday night. I haven't changed the Monday night show permanently yet. Is somehow I made next Sunday also an open line show. So two open line shows, two Sundays back to back, is pretty unusual. And I'm not sure that it's even a good idea. I'm not even sure there's content for it. There's a chance I may just cancel the Sunday show altogether and take a break. There's a chance that I may find a special guest for the Sunday show, or somebody may call in with an idea for a special Sunday show, or I may just let it stand as another open lines show that somehow I messed up in the scheduling. It's way too close to the one for today, but there's no mistake on the upcoming show menu bars. It is set as an open line show. It is my scheduling error, and I just want to call that to everybody's attention. We do have another caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you, and how are you, and where are you?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi there, John. How are you?
Pretty good. Recovering a little bit from a cold here, but otherwise. As far as the Space Gateway, I mean, I'd realize that a lot of what they're doing is they don't have a lander, so they're probably looking at what they can do on the cheap, basically. You know, given what they got Orion, they got the SLS. Everybody's demanding a mission, right? So they've come up with what they can do without an increase in budget, probably. That would be kind of what I think. And I presume that the craft itself could also be similar to a habitation module for a Mars mission in the future, probably, too, right? I mean, it would be kind of a prototype of
well,
that.
Well, I don't know. That's what they say, but advocates of going to the lunar surface don't really support that, and you wouldn't be able to produce fuel and fuel up and do things like that from the gateway like you could from the lunar surface. I don't know. It just seems to me that if you want to go to the lunar surface and have a habitat and learn to live on Mars and use it as a stepping stone for Mars and all of the things that we've been talking about for years, you don't do it in an orbital location a long, long ways from the surface of the moon without a lunar lander. I just don't see it. And it's a lot of money that NASA doesn't have.
This isn't within the current budget profile. I mean, it's like $8 billion spread over how many years? I mean, this is...
Well, but they can't do all of what they want to do with the current budget profile. So, for example, right. If you listen to the Marcia Smith show, when we went through the budget, even though they're getting $19.8 billion, they can't go back to the moon. And the only way they can even attempt it is to spread it out to the late 2020s, but that causes a lot of other problems. But they can't do everything with SLS, with the space station, with Orion, with the Gateway, with all of this stuff that they're spending money on. This is why they've canceled a couple of they've recommended canceling programs, although Congress does not have to agree with those cancellations. One of them is the telescope. What is it, WISE or something like that? And a couple of other sort of smaller projects that they've recommended canceling to try to free up some money. But that just makes a dent in it. So they're not funded to do everything they verbally claim they're going to do, and that they have on their objective plate.
Yeah, but which is cheaper, this Gateway station thing or a lander program? I think the lander would probably be more expensive.
Well, but they're planning on building a lander for the Gateway, and it'll be robotic. So they are going to have a lander for the lunar orbital platform.
Well, that's a lot less expensive than a human-rated lander.
Well, I'm sure it is, but what is the value to the future of the human space program? It's not just what you're paying for it that determines its cost and its value, and if there's a utility value. And what about going to the surface of the moon? Is NASA actually abandoning that? What about the habitat they're going to have on the moon and all of this? So they clearly can't do everything, and they clearly can't even get back to the moon with people with their $19.8 billion budget. I mean, look, today is 2018, and they're talking about the end of the 2020s. Well, that's government speak for probably the middle 2030s. Who knows? And, we had the Cold War going and other things like that. But, we got to the moon with almost zero technology and did far more than we can do today in almost twice that amount of time. So it's... I don't know. I'm in the group that doesn't see the utility value of the Gateway. I've heard the NASA people make the case for it. I also heard them make the case for the asteroid retrieval mission, and that never rang a bell with me either. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, none of this is really funded because the budget for 2019 is proposed, and it has not been accepted yet. So. Who knows?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the Congress will do. I'm just saying is, to some degree, if you're going to build what they are building, they have to have something to do with it, right?
Well, so
about the only thing you can do with it without basically nothing or
go to
something a lot more expensive.
Go to the surface of the moon. And
but that's more expensive. I'm all for going to the first. Hey, if I was the absolute ruler, the NASA budget would be going into an exponential climb.
Well,
that's not the issue. The question is, if they're set with a OMB saying this is all you can have, what do you do if you're in their position?
Well, I don't think you spend it on programs of marginal value. I think.
Well, that's not necessarily. I point out what the value is. It gives a chance to test. This thing is very similar to the habitation module for a Mars mission. It'll be outside the Van Allen belts, and we'll get some real data on what happens to astronauts in that environment.
Let listeners call
it. Going all the way to Mars and find out it's only too late.
Well, then I'll put you down as probably my one or two listeners that support the Gateway, because almost everybody I've talked to outside of NASA doesn't support it at all.
Well, understand this. If I was absolutely in charge, nothing we're doing now would be what I'd be doing. But that's not the point. The point is we are where we are, and what do we do with what we've got?
Okay.
I would have never canceled the shuttle. I would have made shuttle too if you could go back in time and change it.
Well, clearly you're kind of thin-skinned about it, but
Well, I'm not saying it's scandalous. I'm saying that I think everybody has their dream space program, and when that isn't what NASA's doing, they say, let's cancel what they're doing. And
well,
I'm saying,
so when but when you do crap, the result is crap. So
it isn't necessarily. You would have real data on humans in a way beyond Van Allenbelt environment, and something very similar to a Mars mission HAB module.
Well, one of the things I'd like to know, and I don't have any information on this, but maybe listeners know, is what the congressional opinion is of the people on the key committee. What's their opinion of the Deep Space Gateway? Do they accept the NASA view, or do they accept this sort of more commercial space, new space, let's go to the surface of the moon view? I don't know what way Congress might be leaning on something like the Gateway, and if they want it or if they don't want it, because clearly Congress calls the shots on this. So,
well,
I don't know. What does Senator Nelson want? What does Shelby? Do they even talk about it? I don't know. If maybe some listeners know how Congress and the key committee members feel about the lunar orbital platform, and they'll call in and tell us. I'd like to hear that.
Well, I'm not. Yeah. Well, I'd like to. It'd be great if the senators would call in and say their opinion. But I'm just saying. I'm just saying, given the position NASA's in, where they are now, and what they possibly can get from the government with a human space flight, it may be the best thing they can do. Also, you can test out your telerobotic stuff that we've been hearing about all the time.
Well, they can't. I think they canceled those programs in the proposed budget.
Telerobotics?
Yeah, I think Marcia said something. Don't hold me to it, because I'd have to.
Well, what does the Gateway do if it doesn't do something? Well, it was going to have landers.
Or maybe it was on the Logan Atomo Endurus program, where telerobotics came up, and they said those programs were being proposed to be canceled. I heard it someplace. I can't remember which program it's on. Well, it doesn't have to be consistent. It's just the way.
I mean, if you're going to have the craft near the moon to control landers, then they have to have something to control, or it's a kind of a null mission.
I wish I could remember where. Maybe a listener will call in and remind me where it was said. It was said on this show.
Okay.
And I think the more I think about it, the more I think it came from the Logan Atomo team on their show, which was a week ago or 2 weeks ago on Sunday. I think it was on the 11th, so it'd be 2 weeks ago. I don't know, but, you know, people, say, get rid of SLS. I know that's your baby, and then you free up an enormous amount of funding.
Well, my only problem, but we don't have a real program to, okay, let's wait for the BFR to actually fly successfully, and then we can review whether we should get rid of SLS. That's my opinion. If BFR really is flying and proven, then we might make a decision we don't need SLS because we have BFR and it's,
Of course, SLS hasn't flown and is way behind and is over cost budget, too. So if you were a betting person and you were to bet based upon experience, track record, know-how, all of what goes into a paper rocket, because they're both paper rockets as far as I'm concerned at this point, who would you bet on SLS being the winner, or would you bet on BFR being the winner? Which one would you bet would fly, and which one do you bet would probably
fly? SLS will fly first, if you mean the limited version.
Well, just saying flying in general. Does it actually
work?
That's
why I said SLS will fly. It's going to be next year, right?
Well, no. BFR is going to fly next year on test missions, and SLS is not until 2021 or something like that.
For the first test of it?
Yeah, they keep delaying it. It's now late 2020 or 2021.
Well, I don't know. All I'm saying is, does anybody seriously think he's going to have BFR flying next year, seriously?
Everybody, raise your hand. Wait, I can't see how many. I can't see. My vision's not that great.
I mean,
I don't know the answer to that.
When was Falcon Heavy supposed to fly the first time?
John, look.
2012, right? And when did it fly? 18. So, yeah, I'll agree. Give him 6 years. He'll fly it by 2025, maybe.
You know, Musk said just a week ago they're going to start test flights in 2019.
Does he actually have it built yet? This is a massive rocket. It seems to be unlikely. I mean,
I'm just telling you what he said. I'm sure you have heard it. This was at South by
Southwest. I've heard it. That's what I'm reacting to. But I'm also saying
near you. He said it near you in Austin, South by Southwest. They're going to fly test flights in 2019.
I mean, but they haven't even built the thing yet, have they? I mean, I'm
not the SpaceX guru that many are, but no, of course they haven't built it yet. It's never even had its engines tested or anything like that yet.
You're talking about a rocket that's even more massive than a Saturn V. I'm skeptical they have the economic resources to build it. I think if they have the right funding, they have the know-how, I think, maybe in terms of, you know, skill, but you have to also have the money to do something like this. I mean, I'll agree. If BFR is flying successfully and has enough flights in it that we can consider it to be human-rated, then I guess we might not actually need an SLS anymore, right? I mean, the one I think that's kind of going to be obsolete before it flies is the Vulcan. I mean, given what we have in terms of Falcon 9 today, how can this Vulcan be competitive?
I don't know. You should read the CBS article I pointed out in the beginning of my open lines discussion. I threw it out there for discussion.
I'll throw that out so I'm not totally anti-SpaceX. I mean, I think SpaceX has done something absolutely spectacular what they've done with the Falcon 9.
You might be able to find the article. It's a CBS space update from March 16th.
Yeah.
And the title of it is ULA touts new Vulcan rocket in competition with SpaceX.
I mean, one rocket will land its first stage on its tail intact. The other one is going to try to capture an engine pod with an aircraft, a helicopter, I believe. I mean,
well, because they think that's the most economic way to go. There was a really interesting quote in this article by Torrey, if I can find it now, for those of you all who don't know that Torrey is, he's the CEO of ULA. I should try to see if he'd come back on the show to talk about Vulcan. I'm going to send him and his secretary, I'm on good terms with him, and see if he'll come back on. Let me see if I can real quickly find what Torrey Bruno said about his technology recovery plan versus SpaceX. Recovering the engines, it was really interesting. I'm taking too long. I can't hear.
Well, I can find it. I can Google around, I'm sure. But I am aware, but I'm talking conceptually. I think his idea was based on the assumption that SpaceX would fail. That is, they would not have been unable to successfully land and recover intact, usably, first stages.
Basically, what he says is, we think we're betting on the winning technology, and it will be successful, and it will be an economic payoff. And, of course, SpaceX thinks something else about their technology, and over time, we'll see who wins. That's basically what he said.
I'm sure he said it, but my point is, that I think that when they made their plan, they made it on an assumption that the Falcon 9 tail end landing recovery on the barge would not work.
Here, Doug has a note addressed to you. Okay, he's addressed it to you guys, but this is your call, so I'm putting it on your shoulder. And Doug's being a little picky because you're probably stepping on his toes here with your comments. But he says, you guys need to distinguish between the big Falcon booster, spaceship, and rocket. So, John, will you please from now on distinguish your comments to the appropriate vehicle for the benefit of the listeners?
I thought I did make the right distinction. I mean, I thought it was clear from the context when I was talking about Falcon 9 and when I was talking about the BFR.
Well, all right, I mean, he doesn't mention he doesn't say BFR here. He says between the big Falcon booster, spaceship, and rocket. So I guess big Falcon spaceship, big Falcon rocket, big Falcon booster. He wants you to distinguish what you're talking about, John.
Okay. What I'm saying is, as far as the big Falcon booster or BFR, what you want to call it, I'm saying that thing actually making its first test flight next year strikes me as being an implausible. On the other hand, I'm saying Falcon 9, as demonstrating reusability of the first stage, is a major success and probably will make the Vulcan not cost competitive. That's
all right. Well, go find.
I think it's a balanced viewpoint. I'm just saying. I mean, you realize? I mean, the thing that he's attempting with the BFR is really bigger program than the SLS is. And look how much money has gone to that, and look where it's going right now. You know, and it will be more revolutionary in its technology. This the first time we've done a liquid methane engine. That's a technology change. Plus the reusability, I mean, which is kind of demonstrated, but this is a large rocket he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
I'm giving credit where it's due. I'm just saying, you know, Falcon Heavy came in about, 6 years behind the original claim. It did come in better than originally claimed. I guess that's true. But I'm just saying, I think he'll eventually get there if he has the money. I mean, the cost of this is going to be... I'll agree he can do it cheaper than NASA can do it. I'll agree with that much. Maybe a third of the cost or something like that. But still, that's a lot of money.
All right. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I guess I've said a lot and angered everybody. although
No, you haven't angered me. I love different perspectives and different points of view.
But all I'm saying on this other thing is we got to give NASA, they have to do something with what they have. They can't just go out and say, well, everything we've done is no good, so we're recommending canceling it. I'm sure that would get them more money next year. I mean, you know, I mean, there's a political realities to everything you do, I guess is what I'm saying, right? I mean,
well, if anybody knows the congressional perspective of key members of Congress on the Gateway or the Lunar Orbital Platform project, and you know it or you've read something from somebody on the committees that has actually, you know, opined about it, share it with us. We'd like to know if there's any congressional opinion on the Gateway project.
Yeah.
Is that it, John?
That'll be it.
All right. If we're slow, don't hesitate to call us back, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Listeners, I've gotten John off the phone, and if you would like to give us a call, you're more than welcome to do so. 1-866-687-7223. We may be skipping the break, so I need to mention our sponsors for the second segment. Let me do that real quickly. So Orbital ATK is a second segment sponsor, and they're the global leader in aerospace and defense technology and known as a partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. The American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, AIAA, is the world's largest aerospace pro society, and they are a sponsor of the Space Show. More than 30,000 engineers, scientists from 88 countries are represented. They have 5 yearly forums or events, and they're also what they used to be known as conferences. Really great networking, aerospace professionals around the world, helping to shape the future of aerospace all the time by providing tools, insights, exchanges of information, all sorts of really great things. Visit their website at AIAA.org, and hopefully you can attend their events. They do have their Space 2018 event in Orlando in September. I'm considering attending. I'm a little hesitant because of what happened last year with the hurricane, but it's still on my board. So if anyone's interested in Space 2018, let me know what your plans are. Celestis is a sponsor, and they're still the only provider of Memorial spaceflight services in the world. They have a very aggressive 2018 launch manifest for their mission. So Earthrise is an up aerospace suborbital mission coming up out of Spaceport America next month, April. Their 7th Earth orbital mission is mid-2018 from the Cape, and this is on a Falcon Heavy, the General Atomics OTB satellite mission. The Luna mission is going from Mahia, New Zealand, with Moon Express on the new Electron rocket by Rocket Lab. My mom is on that flight. Our 8th orbital mission, the Horizon flight, 4th quarter again, Vandenberg, on a Falcon 9. And then the first Voyager mission, we're supposed to hear about that in March, but I haven't heard anything about it. But that's supposed to go in the fourth quarter of 2018. For more information, visit Celestis at CELESTIS.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Space Show and from me, as I am a very satisfied customer of Celestis. We have another phone call. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
This is Doug from Southern California.
Okay. Too bad John is gone, but go for it.
Yeah, I mean, neither Elon nor Gwynn has said that the full VFR, which is the first stage and second stage, are going to be flying next year. They haven't said that. What they have said is they're going to start with the harder part, which is the upper stage, the BFS, the spaceship, and they're going to be doing hops. So it's basically a grasshopper. And so it makes a big difference, the difference between the equivalent of the grasshopper hopping versus a full-on BFR. Those are like two wildly different things.
Well, since John can't respond to you unless he sends in an email, he probably stands corrected. I'll just put words in his mouth.
Well, yeah. at any rate, I think if you were to keep the open lines next week, we all have much to talk about, so I don't think there's going to be any shortage.
Yeah, but here's the problem. It's the same people all the time. So, you know, it's three or four or five people that do it all the time. So it's like I'm running a private open lines network here. And for whatever reason, a lot of new people don't call in, although I really, really try to get new people to call in. I want new people to call in. They don't, and it's very frustrating to me. I get emails from new people all the time. I just discovered your show. I love this. I love that. I'm so glad I just discovered it, and I try to get them to call, and, of course, they don't call. And so, you know, all of the same people that are calling today will be the ones that call next week. Marshall,
that's true.
Marshall will start it out.
Right.
John will call at some point. You may or may not call, because sometimes you just email. Sometimes you don't have a good phone connection, I don't think. I don't know what the problem, you know, or maybe you have to work. I don't know. You know, it's basically the same stuff. So everybody has a lot to talk about, but I want new blood. And that's why I kind of hesitate to do it back-to-back, because it's not going to be new blood, and if I said first-time callers only, nobody else call, we'd have 90 minutes of dead air, except for me trying to encourage everybody to call.
Yeah, David, you make sense. So whatever you do.
But listen, I agree with you, and I hate to cancel the show. I've canceled a lot of shows so far this year because of the stupid move that I had to do, and then getting the phone lines fixed, which finally got fixed on Tuesday of this week. Crossing my fingers here and knocking on wood. And I'm going to end up canceling some shows again. And I haven't mentioned it because I don't know the dates for it. But my son is having some pretty intensive CF medical issues. I'm going to be heading down to L.A. to be a little bit helpful for a week or 10 days or who the hell knows how long. And I will probably have to kill some programming. And then Madhu is after me to be part of some panels and stuff at ISDC around, the 25th of May, something like that. That necessitates canceling shows again. So I really hate to take more shows off the line because this has been a really bad year for that for me. Yeah, go ahead.
Was it Marshall or John who or was it you, who mentioned $8 billion spread out over years for the Deep Space Gateway?
No, I think that was Marshall, and he said it was on two deep space gateways, because he mentioned that program I was not familiar with called Skylab Roman Numeral II. Remember, he said there were two programs, each with $4 billion, the Gateway program and then something else called Skylab II.
Well, I'm going to have to look that up. Have you heard of any price for Deep Space Gateway?
No, I really haven't, and I just basically know what it's about, and I know the NASA party line. I know why people object to it, and I'd rather go to the surface of the moon and have a lander. But you know, they don't have money for all of what they want to do right now. So,
speaking of the lander, I just wanted to comment, sort of respond to John. He he makes the assumption that going to the moon is going to cost more than the Deep Space Gateway.
Correct.
In other words,
yes, that's his assumption. You're right.
And if it was, if these were both government programs, I would agree. If they were both commercial programs, I would agree. But if the Deep Space Gateway is primarily a government program, and then if the transportation system to the moon were set up as a public-private program, then I would disagree. I think we can go to the surface of the moon without spending the money on SLS and Orion launches to and establishing a deep space gateway. I think if we do a public-private program, I don't think it's cost much more than the 5% that it's cost us before. And in particular, what we need now is not a launcher, now that we have Falcon Heavy, but what we need is a lander. And the leading candidate in a competition for a lander, in my opinion, would be United Launch Alliance with their Zeus concept, because that largely already exists. It would be a modification of something that's flown many, many times. And so the cost of modifying an upper stage to be a lander, I wouldn't anticipate that it should cost any more than it cost NASA to fund SpaceX to develop its Falcon 9, which was about $400,000. And a lander doesn't go through Max-Q. The lander, the engines already exist. The RL-10s are well flown. So I don't know why it should cost all that much to be able to establish a lander.
Well, of course, you're not, and others with your perspective are not making the policy. So it is,
in
that sense, the name of the game is the gateway, unless the project is not funded or canceled or something. And a lot of people don't support it.
So I just use the term gateway because I think LOPC, the Lunar Orbital Platform - Gateway, is just a mouthful. And we end up, at this point in time, making a distinction between Deep Space Gateway and LOPC, and, I just call it all gateway. I don't care what version it is. It's just the gateway. but I would somewhat disagree with you in terms of popularity of the of Deep Space Gateway. I think that the administration, I've spoken to two of the top policy people, and they are fully on board with the gateway.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said that the party line people love it. They're there.
And I think the party line probably includes Congress. And from firsthand experience, I believe it also includes international partners, basically our ISS partners. And I think they are all making a bad decision for their own interest. I think the administration is not going to have any space legacy if they had the gateway path. I think Congress, who does support going to the surface of the moon, I think that they believe that the gateway is the correct way to do it, because when we establish the gateway, the theory goes, then commercial partners and international partners can use that as a platform for the moon, hence the LOP. The problem is these people are not architects. They don't understand the concept that you can go directly to the moon, and that going to a gateway really is going to be, if you use that money to go directly to the moon, you'd save a lot of money. And then the international partners are also undermining themselves, because really they want to go to the surface of the moon so that they can do their own Apollo program. But they also believe that going to the gateway is a step towards the moon. And so this is why I think, like Zubrin looks at things first and foremost from an architectural standpoint. And because he understands the technical side of things, he can figure out cost-effective ways, approaches to accomplish the goal. And I really think that's the way policy should be made.
Well, I have a show coming up with somebody from ESA on the Moon Village. Are you aware of that?
Who is it?
Ran Simberg introduced me to her.
And Angeliki Kopalugu?
Yes, and she was supposed to be Monday, this coming Monday, but she got to travel. So she's coming on, I think it's later in April, I think. It's on the comprehensive schedule when I upload the new website newsletter. It's either April or May. Have you met her or talked to her?
I met her at League. She's a very nice gal.
Well, that's where Rand met her and introduced me to her. I have no idea what she's going to say, although I'm sure she supports the idea very much.
Yeah, I mean, she is sort of very much tied in with ESA, and so I think she's going to support whatever they support.
But that's the closest I've come to a show about the ESA Moon Village. And that will be forthcoming, and hopefully she won't have to change her schedule again. But she seems very responsive, so I'm looking forward to talking with her.
Yeah, good. Let me just mention to the listeners, the issue of radiation is a little bit complex because you have different types of radiation and you have different settings. And so you don't have a one-size-fits-all solution. I have recently developed a subpage on spacedevelopment.org that goes through and explains how the radiation challenge can be addressed in low Earth orbit, in transit to Moon and transit to Mars, and then on the surface of the Moon or Mars, as well as basically EVAs on the surfaces of the Moon and Mars. And it's a different solution for each of those settings. So just like to encourage the listeners to go to spacedevelopment.org/radiation.html, all lowercase. So it's spacedevelopment.org/radiation.html.
I have invited Dr. Nathan Schwerden twice now from the University of New Hampshire, who led this most recent study, and he's never responded to my emails. So I'm debating on inviting him a third time or going to some other authors that are on the name of the paper. One of the authors is one I know who has been on the space show before, so I may punt and run on the lead author, Nathan, and go for the one that I know. But I'd like to have that new study discussed on the program, and I'm striving to get that, but it hasn't happened yet.
You hear an echo of yourself, David?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But you may hear it. I'm on a different kind of system than you are, but you're kind of echoing, but you're not bad. I know you're on a cell phone.
I'm hearing your voice being played, actually, just in the past.
No, I'm not. Thank God I'm not picking that up, which means it won't be on the recording because I'm listening to what's on the recording.
Okay. Let me hang up and let somebody else get in.
Thank you, Doug. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That clears the toll-free line for somebody else who might want to give us a call today, 1-866-687-7223. Any space, STEM, STEAM, or science topic is up for grabs. Space policy topics are up for grabs. Nobody's really, well, we have courted with space policy, so all of that is up for grabs. We'd love to hear from you. Email is drspace@thespaceshow.com. If you want to comment on whether I should do a back-to-back open line show next Sunday, that's fair game, too. Doug supported that. John Hunt sent in a note about that and said, he said the subject line was same people. And he says, but we are great, and the listeners want to hear what we have to say. Okay, I'm not going to take issue with you, John, but sometimes one doesn't see clearly. What can I say? I don't know. Let me tell you, while we're waiting to see if anybody else wants to participate in today's program, and I hope they do because it's early in the program. We do have some interesting shows coming up. So speaking about the surface of the moon, Dr. Ben Arroyo is back with us on Tuesday evening. And he has a new book And excuse me, I just reached over and grabbed it. Building Habitats on the Moon, Engineering Approaches to Lunar Settlements. So clearly, Dr. Benaroya would like to go to the surface of the moon. So this is a really interesting book. I've been looking through it. He sent me a media copy of it. It's by Springer Praxis. And so for those of you lunar inclined and lunar habitat inclined and want to go surface of the moon, the Tuesday night show with Dr. Benaroya is probably made to order for you. Let's see what this is. I have an email from Hank, who I believe is in the Netherlands. You Americans are dumb. You know, Hank, here's the deal. I've warned you about name-calling, okay? And I am going to read your email on air, but if you continue being derogatory and calling people names, you're violating our rules for how we behave civilly on the space show, in that we can disagree with people all day long, but we don't call them people names and we don't character assassinate. I'm going to block you from ever commenting on our blog again. And the only way I will release that blog is with your assurances that you're going to become civil in your behavior. So I don't know what the rest of your note says, but starting out calling people dumb is not okay on the space show. So this is what the guy says. You Americans are dumb. You are flat broke, has been, that are on the way out of history. China will cream your ass in space. Okay, I'm not reading anymore, okay? You're on the blog. I'm going to remove your blog post when the show is over with, and I'm going to block you as a spammer. And if you want to be unblocked, you need to email me and assure me that you are going to behave civilly. You can disagree all day long with content and what people say. You can't use bad language, and you can't character assassinate and call people names. End of story. Sorry about that, listeners, but some people just don't get it. And I don't know what to say. Okay. On Hotel Mars Wednesday, we have MIT has come forth again like they did with the I got another caller on hold, but real quick, let me tell you about Hotel Mars, like they did with their critique of Mars One. But this time they have won a NASA Mars design contest and some other things. NOVA has done a series on them, and I have their lead team designer, George Lourdes, is going to be with us, with John Batchelor and me, for Hotel Mars. And we'll see how that develops. Maybe it'll develop into a full space show program with other team members, like we did when Sidney Lowe and others were going after Mars One for their plans. Friday, Derek Weber is on, and he has another terrific new book that you'll enjoy hearing about. Afterglow, Reflections on the Golden Age of Moon Explorers. Very good, lots of pictures, informative, you'll enjoy it. And then, as I said, Open Lines is set for Sunday, March 25th. Let's see who our caller is. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you, please?
Hi, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Another one of your regulars.
Another one of my regulars, yes. Welcome to Open Lines today.
You know, I did want to say that you, in the last two Open Lines shows, you've gotten a couple of new callers.
Well,
and they were good.
Well, I like new callers. I don't have any new ones yet. I do have one new emailer, and that's this guy who continues to want to be nasty in the Netherlands. And I'm not even reading his entire note. But I just don't want that bitterness and negativity. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, I want new blood. And, boy, tell me how to get it, Kim.
Well, I'm saying, you know, you gotta be positive, because you did have I think it was three callers if you put the other last two Open Lines together who called and talked for a while and had really good things to say.
Well, call today, new callers, call today. So you're telling me to do the Open Line show next Sunday?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, if you did come up with a guest between now and then, I think it's more variety for the listeners on Sunday, because I wouldn't be surprised if there's some people who normally only listen on Sunday because it fits easier into their schedule. But, no, I think open lines shows tend to be animated and tend to have a fair bit of content in them.
Okay.
But I'm biased.
What else is on your mind? I know you have a show coming up on Tuesday. Not Tuesday. When is your show coming up?
It's a week to Tuesday.
A week from Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't gotten Haim's book yet. He sent one to me as well, but it hasn't arrived, unfortunately. So I don't think I'll have a copy in order to call in when he comes on the show.
It's an excellent book, and it really is great. Maybe you can open up and see parts of it on Amazon. I'm not sure how that works. But I've had my copy for about 2 weeks, so I'm sure it would take longer to get to you in Mexico, but hopefully you'll have it. You'll really enjoy it. It's a great book.
Oh, yeah. It's precisely and exactly the book I need for my project. So there's that. And
go ahead.
Other than that, I was just going to I think Doug was being a little bit provocative because he knows that, you know, NASA did not spend only $400,000 and they got a brand new rocket from that. In the first round of COTS, SpaceX got almost $300 million. And the funding that SpaceX had before they had a successful launch of Falcon 9 was something on the order of $800 million. So, yes, cheaper, but not dirt cheap. And a lander is a really different thing. So I just wanted to make note of that.
Do you want to support the Gateway, or are you not a big fan of that idea?
Well, I'm going to pick up mostly on what John said in the sense that with a budget of around $20 billion and a bunch of things that are just things that you have to pay for, regular ongoing capital payments that, you know, have nothing to do with what you can actually put into space. On that budget, the Gateway is not a bad deal at all. So it always comes back to the same thing. If you want more, you've got to give NASA more money. Or the thing that I love and doesn't seem to have much traction in the spatial audience, you've got to work with other space agencies more. You know, Europe, you know, if they're on board with the Gateway, it's only because they're looking, they're constantly looking for a way to work more closely with NASA. And they want a moon village. And if NASA would really, genuinely, honestly work closely with ESA, you know, if the government let them, if that was a policy on an ongoing basis, together they could do more. And we never really tackle that question. And it's a very fundamental question. Because eventually in space, it's important to have an international consensus and do things together. And we haven't gotten anywhere on that.
Well, all of that is true. But they do work with the international partners. I mean, they certainly have a great track record of doing that with the space station over all these years. So they've got other ventures where they're doing things with international partners. So I don't think there's any shortage of interest in doing that. And of course, it does help spread the cost around. There's no doubt about that. And they are involved in the Gateway. So I don't know. I prefer to go to the surface of the moon rather than do the Gateway and it's not an intermediate step. It looks like it's either the surface of the moon or the Gateway. It looks like it's one or the other, right? Or am I misreading something?
Well, when the Three Amigos were on, and Dan Animal mentioned some very interesting things about the orbit of the Gateway. And it is helpful for getting to the surface of the moon, but it has its limitations in that respect. It's, you know, it does. He would know better. It'd be nice if somebody could talk about the advantages to getting to the surface from the Gateway more precisely. I was interested in that part of that show. but it's certainly not the same as having a ship that's dedicated to specifically going to the surface. You can only do it at certain times. You can only get to certain places. And you take a bit of a hit in the Delta V. That was what I took away from that. But still, you know, it's a space station in deep space. Something we've never done before. And, you know, on a budget, I don't think it's a bad project at all.
Well, it's probably going to happen, unless other stuff happens with the NASA budget by Congress, and I don't think that's going to happen, but anything's possible. But I think they'll get funded with what they have proposed. But I guess that's all to be determined.
So I haven't followed this at all, actually. So can I take from that the Trump administration is stepping back from their aim to actually go to the moon itself?
I'm probably not the one to answer it, but no, because the National Space Council, which represents the administration, wants to go back to the moon. So this is one of those contradictions, right? But I don't think nobody thinks they're funded to do all of the projects that NASA is talking about. So they have a program that they want to go back to the moon, and they're deferring and spreading that out until the late 2020s for mostly budgetary reasons. And the Gateway project is nearer term. So I think they still want to go back to the moon, but you're going to need someone following the budget stuff more closely than what I'm following it. But it is confusing, because if the Gateway is instead of going to the surface of the moon, then what is the National Space Council continually talking about in advocating a space policy to go back to the surface of the moon with astronauts? Because you're correct, this is contradictory. So I think they're thinking both. But they're just deferring out the human program way out there. Doug, who seems to have much closer to a better understanding of all of this than me, you are correct that in the public-private setting, SpaceX and NASA have contributed about $400 million each. The question is whether the $8 billion will be spent on the Gateway would be sufficient to get cargo and crew to the surface of the moon if using a public-private approach. Based upon our experience with COTS, commercial cargo, and commercial crew, it appears, though, it could. So Doug seems to indicate that the Gateway would serve to support the National Space Council's goals of going back to the moon with people. It's very confusing to most of us. And I think contradictory, and again, they don't have the money, even if the proposed budget for 2019 is fully funded, to do all of what they want to do, which is why they're canceling some programs, although they haven't canceled enough to make all of this plausible. And there's every good chance that what they've announced they will cancel, like the Wise Space Telescope, will get added back in by Congress, because that is really an important mission on the science side, and an absolute favorite important mission on the science side. So if they add it back in and don't cut something else, then the budget is even tighter than it was under the proposed realm. So there's a lot of issues there, and there's a lot of confusion, but I do think the administration wants to go back to the moon with people. And that is the position of the National Space Council, which is reflective of the administration.
Yeah, but there's now 3 years left in this administration, and the Space Council is a pretty political body. And, you know, if you're talking about things going to happen in the second half of the 2020s, then really you can't say anything at all.
I don't know. I mean, track record is that incoming presidents like to trash what outgoing presidents started and create their other programs. So they try to bulletproof it by getting money allocated and this and that and the other, but they, you know, as we saw with Obama and Constellation, they still canceled it, and they paid billions of dollars in cancellation fees to ATK and to others that were involved in the original contract. So, if Trump did not run and win a second term, his program might be at risk. And in addition, if the Congress changes parties, either both houses or one house, his plan might be at risk. But keep in mind, space has typically been bipartisan, even in these horrifically partisan times. So I don't know how to really answer with any firmness, but I think anything long-term is probably in jeopardy the way we finance and do projects with government, and be it a military project or just about any project. But you're right. If it's going to take place in the second theoretical term of Trump and the Republicans controlling the Congress, it may very well be at risk.
Well, we'll see what we see. I mean, you know, part of me agrees with people who say that in the end it's going to be a commercial thing. One way or another, it'll be the commercial people who beat out the governments. And another part of me thinks that would be a real shame, because one thing that is nice about a government is that the big money is there to do things on a larger scale and to do them properly. And that's important. It's expensive, but it's also important.
Well, I mean, another administration might want to go back to the moon, too. And China is a wild card, and a lot of people believe that the Chinese plans are very competitive and in some sense threatening. So China doesn't have to face a Congress or anything. They just can fund what they want to do and set their own priorities. You know, it's not a democratic process. So maybe China making a real effort to be on the moon and do things like that would motivate Congress to want to go back to the moon, and a return to the moon program would survive, although it might look a little different than it would have under another administration. But, as you said, we'll see what we'll see. I think all of this is up in the air, and we certainly don't know what the future of this administration will be, let alone what will happen with the next administration. And space doesn't even get talked about as a category of national interest. When's the last time heard space as a national issue? You know, everything is about what the two parties fight about and divide about, and Russia and this and that and the other, and North Korea and Iran. I mean, you don't hear space much at all, except we hear it in our community.
It's true. I actually don't even really know. I've been curious, because my impression from the amount of traffic that Space Dot Stack Exchange got after the Falcon Heavy launch and the videos of the launch is that the Falcon Heavy launch was extremely popular among the public. Our traffic tripled on the website for a couple of weeks after that. If you have big successes, the space can quickly become more popular a lot more quickly. But, you know, maybe my perception is distorted because within the community.
I think you're right. And President Trump has mentioned the success of the private sector and the Falcon Heavy and SpaceX on multiple occasions since that launch. He even mentioned it at a big cabinet meeting. That's one of the news articles that Zimmerman's going to talk about on Monday night. Then he brought out all these models of commercial rockets, and that was just a week ago. And so it's gotten a lot of attention, and it got the attention of the president. So whether Congress and the administration will carry through on space policy in some way, I can't tell you. But it's very popular and probably still is today, although I have seen some negative chatter about the Tesla portion of the mission, but overall, I think it's received a lot of really glowing press and a lot of support globally.
Well, I'll tell you, in terms of the general public, the Tesla was the star.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it was brilliant in terms of public relations, because the general public who doesn't care about space loves Starman.
Absolutely.
But anyhow.
I just wonder if Starman was really Elon. What do you think?
No. I think he played it right. He put something up there that could be a symbol for everyone, and that's what you should do.
Here, Doug has another note for you. I don't know. Maybe this is the same note. No, this is the same note. I'm sorry. What do you have planned for your upcoming birthday when Zimmerman is on the air?
I was just talking to my husband about that, because actually it's a holiday tomorrow when my birthday is. And we have the day free and we could go to something really special. But I have this really careful diet, and I'm just deciding whether I'm going to throw it to the wind tomorrow or if I'm going to try to be good, because I always pay. I pay heavily when I go off my diet.
Well, I'm trying to get Bob to sing you happy birthday, so hopefully you'll hear it. But why don't you get someone to bake you a planet cake, like I said at the opening remarks. Go to that website. The cakes look really, really cool. I have no idea what they would taste like, but they could make a moon cake for you. They give the recipes on how to do it. How cool would that be? And then you could send us all pictures of your party.
I'll try to do something that would be worth it, putting on the blog. Let's put it that way. I'll promise you that.
Well, a moon cake. Go try it. I'll send you the website for although I gave it out on air, but I'll send it to you. It's well worth it.
I'll get off the line. I've been on for a while, but in regards to China, you reminded me that I saw a pie chart a week or so ago of the launches planned for 2018. And SpaceX and China were neck and neck. Together, they take up like 60% of the entire market in the whole world, and they have pretty much exactly the same number of launches planned.
Yeah, I know. That's been the way it's been for a while, too. It's pretty amazing, because SpaceX is a private company.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, I'll get out of the line.
Thank you, Kim. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okie dokie.
Listeners, that frees up our line. If somebody else wants to call, we still have time to take your call. And it is 1-866-687-7223. And email drspace@thespaceshow.com. I was telling you about some shows that I think you'll find interesting coming up. And so let me give you a couple of other ones. Dr. Josh Banfield, who wrote the paper on lunar water distribution that we discussed on a recent Open Line show, is going to be the guest on the show Monday, April 2nd. Our friend from the Planetary Society, Emily Lakdawala, is going to be here. She wrote a really interesting article about how to communicate better when you speak at conferences and write papers and things like that and space stuff. And I was really impressed by her article. So I asked her to come on the show and talk about communication skills, because I was extrapolating and thought it would be really interesting even for callers on the space show. One of our favorites is coming back, Jeff Landis, NASA, Venus Cloud City. He's going to be with us April 9th. Casey Dreyer of the Planetary Society is with us on April 10th. In Germany, Dr. Dirk Schultz-Makuch, I hope I'm getting his name right. He's written a new book, and he's really done a lot of famous work about searching for life and extraterrestrial life, and he is an astrophysicist and astronomer, and his book is called The Cosmic Zoo, and he's going to be with us. Coming up on April 17th, Seth Shostak of SETI is back with us. James Schwartz is back with us April 23rd. From Wichita State. Remember, he was on regarding the first of a three-part series on the myth of the frontier. for space people, and he's going to continue that. Orbital ATK has a show on April 27th. We got another caller on the line, but on April 19th, Brian Keating is another cosmologist from UC San Diego, very famous, and he has a really great book out about losing the Nobel Prize. I thought all of you would enjoy hearing about that. Let's see who our caller is. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please? Are you there? Hello, caller. Going once, twice, three times. Caller, can you hear me? Caller, are you there? Well, the line hasn't disconnected, so I don't know why we can't hear the caller. We don't have a dial tone, so he's still there or she's still there. All right, caller, you're going to have to call back. We can't hear you. So, caller, if you want to give us a call, it is 1-866-687-7223, and it is ringing. Let's see if we can hear now. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you? Where are you?
This is Tim from Huntsville.
Okay, go ahead, call. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, this is my question about Constellation and SLS.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm wondering, my question is this. One, how similar is Constellation and SLS? Because to me it looks about the same. I mean, I didn't really look at it. And the other thing is, how much support did the Obama administration give to SLS, even though it killed Constellation?
So, first of all, Constellation was the name of a Return to the Moon project, but it had the component of a heavy lift rocket in it. So the SLS is the surviving heavy lift rocket that was part of Constellation, and it's a little bit different. So my understanding, and listeners can correct me if they want, maybe John from Fort Worth can correct me because he's probably closer to this than anything else. Congress wanted to keep the big rocket, and they wanted to keep the big rocket aerospace manufacturing capability in place, given all the layoffs and the cutbacks and what was happening when Shuttle was terminated and what would happen with the cancellation of the overall Constellation project. So Obama wasn't really supportive of the big rocket, but he did not, as far as I remember, buck or challenge the Congress and their will to have the SLS. The will to have SLS was a bipartisan effort on Congress, and Democratic senators and congressmen were really big because a lot of SLS would happen in their districts. So, you know, it made it through all the fundings and the budgets and the hearings, and he didn't really stand in its way. Although most of what I heard was he wasn't supportive of it, but he did not try to stop it. But it's a direct derivative of the big rocket that was part of Constellation. There are some differences between what SLS is and what the big rocket was going to be, and probably some difference in budget costs and stuff like that. But it basically is the survivor of the Constellation project.
Okay. Well, yeah, I hate to admit I didn't really look into it, the technical details, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit that.
Well, there are some technical differences. I don't remember what they are, and there are some budgetary differences, and SLS is doing a smaller version, and then 10 years later or 8 years later or whatever it'll turn out to be, they're going to do the big, heavy, huge portion of it, if that ever happens. So, you know, there are some funding differences and technical capability differences and size differences and things like that, but it is the survivor of Constellation's rocket program. Remember, they had the small rocket for the human transportation, and the big rocket, you know, was going to come in. So this is the big one, and Congress, particularly the Senate, wanted to keep it, and so we have it.
One last question: if Elon Musk is successful with his BFR, how likely is it going to keep funding SLS?
So it depends on who you talk to. So if you talk to a committed private space advocate, they believe that the success of the BFR will eventually cause a shutdown of the SLS. If you talk to someone who understands the need to have competition and that SLS represents more than just the big rocket in that it's got a national security component and a national interest component to it, which BFR doesn't really have, then there's a reason for Congress to continue to fund it. And as long as Congress sees that there's a national security and a national interest of the United States in having the big rocket, they'll continue to fund it regardless of what the BFR does. So I think that latter view is probably the prevailing view. So I would imagine even a very successful BFR will not anytime soon cause a cancellation of SLS, because I think SLS has a component of special interest in national security and national interest that BFR does not have. Are you still there? We're getting telephone noise from you.
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm listening to you.
Okay. So I'm of the opinion that SLS won't be canceled unless there's a real bigger budget crisis than what we have right now. But, you know, look, I could be wrong, and a very successful BFR could cause cancellation of SLS, especially if it's not flying, if it's late, if it blows up on the pad, you know, something like that. Where
yeah,
happen.
Of course. If something happens, then it makes the case for SLS better. If something happens to BFR. However, what I'm wondering about is, what sort of national security interests are there for having a super heavy lift vehicle? I can understand something like a Delta IV Heavy, but SLS?
Well, they claim it's in the country's national interest to have this capability and this potential. And, you know, it can put up heavy military payloads. It can do a lot of things that we can't do right now. Even when we were talking about the Hammer project on Hotel Mars for planetary defense with nuclear options, and that's currently not a program, but it is talked about a lot, and my guest was on from Lawrence Livermore Lab. By the way, I'm trying to get him to do a full space shuttle program on this. You know, the size of rocket that you can use to deliver a warhead to attempt a deflection of a dangerous incoming asteroid is crucial to the mission, the amount of payload you can deliver, the timeline for doing this, and all of this. So having a national interest, security interest in the rocket that you're going to use to do that may amount to something. Now, that's not to say that they might not turn to SpaceX and say, put the warhead on your rocket and let's go see if we can't deflect this asteroid. We've got 8 years. It's 8 years out, but we know it's headed to Earth, and we got to try to deflect it. So could they put a warhead on a BFR? Yeah, of course they could. So I'm just telling you what people say, that they can conjure up all national interest, priority, national security things that the government deems in that category, whereas the SpaceX BFR is corporately owned and doesn't serve for the national interest of the United States. It serves SpaceX in their bottom line as a commercial rocket. That doesn't mean it can't fly and do something for the national interest, but it isn't designed
to
serve
it.
Yeah, it's not under our control. And you know, who knows? I could envision the government saying doing this, and this is a national interest, and SpaceX could say, you know, it's too expensive for, you know, what you want to do. And I maybe not step up to the plate to be the sacrificial lamb to do it. So you can conjure up any scenario you want on this, you know, from extreme to, you know, glowingly beneficial. And what are the odds of one of these scenarios happening? I don't know. But all I can tell you from talking to people is that they see national security and national interest in having the big rocket and being able to control it, and they understand that the SpaceX rocket or the Blue Origin rocket or the ULA rocket is not under their control. So even though it may want to help the United States and may lend itself to our national interests, it's not designed to serve the national interests. And then keep in mind that serving the national interests may not have anything to do with commercial profitability, whereas the SpaceX rockets and the private sector rockets are designed to produce commercial profitability. So is it worth spending all this money for something like the SLS when you have a BFR capability, assuming both fly and both are developed? I think if you ask 50 people, you'd get 75 answers. I really do. So we don't make the policy, Tim. You and me can have whatever opinions we want, and Doug and John Hunt, and we're not the policy wonks. So, you know, the guys we send to Congress are going to be the ones making the policy and the decisions, not us out here in the hinterlands. So I really think you'd have 50 different people being polled. You'd have 75 or 100 different responses.
Okay. Well, thanks.
All right. Sorry I couldn't answer your question better.
No, you did as best you could. That's all, man.
Yep, that's it. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Listeners, we're coming up on a two-hour program. So I'm going to call an end to our open line show. I guess if somebody calls in real quick before I do all the goodbyes, you know, I'll answer the phone. But we thank you for listening. All of you who called in, we certainly thank you for calling in and letting us your two cents worth. I find something interesting here. The more calls I get, the fewer emails I get. And that I find that interesting. And in before, the callers were not the emailers. I mean, Doug is an exception because he usually emails and calls. So the busier we are on the phones, the fewer emails we get from everybody. And the less activity we have on the phones, the more emails we get. Interesting. We got a squeaky listener calling. Squeaked in the nick of time, and I'm going to take the call. So, hi, caller. You're the last call of the day. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you and what's on your mind?
Oh, this is John in Fort Worth.
Okay.
Well, I think, as I see, the rationale for continuing with SLS, I mean, I think, first of all, I think that a lot of the SLS backers are still skeptical of the BFR ever really happening. I don't think it's like we take BFR as a given and then say, whoa, but we need SLS too. I think it's like, you know.
No, you're 100% right. They say it's not tested, and SpaceX is not proven yet to take on the role of national security and national interest. And we have no choice but to go and do this for the interest of the United States government and come back to us when SpaceX has the track record to back this up. Now, look, they're launching Air Force satellites. They're doing other things. They got some GPS satellites getting ready to launch. So SpaceX is earning its way, but you're 100% right, John. They do not see BFR as being the comparable for national interest as the SLS. And SpaceX will have to earn that position to dislodge SLS from being the only stakeholder for national interest.
I think that's the main point on that. And also, I guess there is a degree of competition issue. And the other thing is, I still point that you know, the BFR is way beyond what the Falcon 9 in terms of accomplishment, investment, a lot of things. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, I think there's still reason that you can be very optimistic about, or say, well, SpaceX has overperformed expectations, or whatever you want to call it, or at least the moderate expectation, maybe not the true believer. But the point is, I still have a little bit like, do you guys actually have the resources to actually bring the BFR off? I'm if they do it, I'm not going to be sad if they do it. Don't get me wrong. And if they have a fully tested up BFR and the Falcon and SLS is still struggling, You know, that's a whole different scenario that will be, that would show up in the future if it does happen, you know.
No, I think you're right, and I guess over time we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah. I wanted to say about it. The other interest I think that's there a little bit, as I recall, there was some interest in the ATK solid rocket booster technologies being kept online because they could be used for future like heavy ICBMs and stuff. And the thing is, we don't really know what the defense sector is going to look like, say, circa 2030 at this point, you know?
Right.
China's an emerging power. It's the number two economy in the world. It is going stronger every day. And I would point out that if they decide to so far in the strategic forces area, they've been pretty modest in what they put into it. They've sort of taken the attitude to have a minimal capability and to not get into competition with the United States and Russia. But at any point in time, they conceivably could break out of that behavior pattern, and that would change the whole environment, you know.
By the way, Doug sent in an email, and I'm going to read it because it's for you. But Doug and others, I believe the telephone problem that I experienced with my move to Petaluma, which prevented me from using the second phone line I have at the same time as my other phone line, has been cured. So, for example, Doug, in the future, if you wanted to call in and talk to John, for example, not for today because we're out of time, if you emailed me, I would give you that number, that direct number. But I have to plan for it ahead of time, and I will do that on open lines. And it's not the number you had before in area code 415. It's an area code 707 number. But I believe we have resolved all of these problems. So I could take another caller on the second line. It's not toll-free. You'd have to endure the cost of using that line. But instead of sending in an email to John, for example, you could talk to John. But John, here is his email. If the BR, this is again from Dr. Doug, if the BFR became successful, what would be your position on SLS?
Well, I think at that point it might, I mean, if it does everything it's supposed to do, including being totally reusable, and being of the scale it's talked about and the economical as he says it's going to be, I think it would become non-competitive at that point, right? I mean,
yeah, but then what about this national security component that they think SLS serves?
Well, I think the biggest component, well, I mean, they might have some missions they want to reserve. There is a question of, I don't know, I think it might become less significant then. Again, my main concern is, you know, you have some, I'm really worried that SpaceX may bankrupt itself, frankly. I mean, I think they're striving toward a goal that's beyond normal financial motivations for a company, you know, the goal of Mars.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they really fully realize what they're getting into building a super, I mean, I just compare the, a lot of companies have built things somewhat in the vicinity of the Falcon 9 in terms of capability. The big innovation there is the reusability of the first stage. But other than that, you know, there's no, you could use the ULA rockets for the same kind of missions mostly, you know. But the real issue is that they've gone to such, this is a big jump. I'm not saying they won't pull it off. I hope they do. You know what I mean? That's my thinking there, is let's just not throw away what we, everything until we see them, how they progress. Now we know, like, this is going to be the grasshopper test next year. Okay, that I can buy. But some kind of a grasshopper test. But, you know, there's a lot to do to.
Okay, well, we're going to leave it at that, John, because.
I think we should, yeah.
Because I got to shut the program down.
Well, let's wrap it up.
Because
then.
Pepper is looking at me like it's either going to be your carpet dad or outside quickly. So,
okay, let's get to the dog.
If somebody wants to pick up on John and his concern about SpaceX doing too much in bankruptcy, open lines will probably take place next Sunday. So you can pick up that theme, and I'm sure John will be listening, and you can opine on that. But John's is the last call for today. So, listeners, I want to thank everybody for calling, and I appreciate all of your calls and your points of view. And I thank those of you who emailed us, except for the one guy in the Netherlands who I don't want to hear from again. Everybody, listen, have a great week. It's the first of a week, and I hope it's a good one for everybody. And keep looking up, all right? And then come back. Remember, Zimmerman with timely stuff tomorrow night, 7 p.m., not 2 p.m., 7 p.m. California time. Tuesday, Dr. Ben Arroyo, Hotel Mars. It's pre-recorded. Who knows when John will archive it, but we'll get it up as soon as possible. And Friday, Derek Weber with his book about the moon history. Great photographs. Really cool. And then Sunday, open lines again. So goodbye from all of you, and we thank you for your support. And remember, we are a listener-supported show. Don't forget us. If you like these programs, do support us. Again, have a great week. And as you look up, the Space Show really supports and appreciates your being with us on these programs. Goodbye, all. Take care.